Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, people. Back to the world again. It's Douglas Douglas. This is the Hard Work Hour. It's 11 a.m. Well, it's 11:03. We're a little bit late. Friday morning, April 22nd, 2016. We're reporting from... All right, technical difficulties. Never before happened here. Hope all is good. Hope you're ready for a reading, because that's all we got today. There's a lot of stuff going on, but you wouldn't know, because everything's either Prince or Trump. So I urge you to complain to your media sources. Call up NBC, CBS, send them an email, send them a text, and say, enough with Trump. Enough with this goddamn campaign. It's going to be 7 months before the election, and we're, what, 2 years into this crap? All right, so a lot. That's it. That's the local news. And our reading today is from Ken Kesey. And let's see if you can guess the title from this dedication poem. Sometimes I live in the country, sometimes I live in the town. Sometimes I get a great notion to jump in the river and drown. And that's from the song Goodnight Irene, Huddy Ledbetter and John Lomax. And that's the dedication page for a book called Sometimes a Great Notion, one of the two great books from Ken Kesey. And we're going to read for 9.5 minutes. Chapter one, along the... Well, it's not chapter one. It's just the beginning of the book. Along the western slope of the Oregon coastal range, come look. The hysterical crashing of tributaries as they merge into the Wakonda Ogwo River. The first little washes, flashing like thick rushing wings through sheep sorrel and clover, ghost fern and nettle, shearing, cutting, forming branches. Then through bearberry and salmonberry, blueberry and blackberry, the branches crashing into creeks, into streams. Finally, in the foothills. Sorry, I'm making a note. I can't read without a pen in my hand, can you? Okay. Finally, in the foothills, through tamarack and sugar pine, shittim bark and silver spruce, and the green and blue mosaic of Douglas fir, the actual river falls 500 feet, and look, opens out upon the fields. Metallic at first, seen from the highway down through the trees like an aluminum rainbow, like a slice of alloy moon. Closer, becoming organic, a vast smile of water with broken and rotting pilings jagged along both gums, foam clinging to the lips. Closer still, it flattens into a river, flat as a street, cement gray with a texture of rain, flat as a rain-textured street even during flood season because of a channel so deep and a bed so smooth, no shallows to set up buckwater rapids, no rocks to rile the surface, nothing to indicate movement except the swirling clots of yellow foam skimming seaward with the wind and the thrusting groves of flooded bam, bent taut and trembling by the pull of silent, dark momentum. A river smooth and seeming calm, hiding the cruel file edge of its current beneath a smooth and calm-seeming surface. The highway follows its northern bank, the ridges follow its southern. No bridges span its first 10 miles. And yet, across on that southern shore, an ancient two-story wooden frame house sits on a structure of tangled steel, of wood and earth and sacks of sand, like a two-story bird with split-shake feathers, sitting fierce in its tangled nest. Look. Rain drifts about the windows, Rain filters through a haze of yellow smoke issuing from a mossy stone chimney into slanting sky. The sky runs gray, the smoke wet yellow. Behind the house, up in the shaggy hem of mountainside, these colors mix in windy distance, making the hillside itself run a muddy green. On the naked bank between the yard and humming river's edge, a pack of hounds pads back and forth, whimpering with cold and brute frustration, whimpering and barking at an object that dangles out of their reach, over the water, twisting and untwisting, swaying stiffly at the end of a line tied to the tip of a large fir pole jutting out of a top-story window. Twisting and stopping and slowly untwisting in the gusting rain, 8 or 10 feet above the flood's current, a human arm, tied at the wrist, just the arm, look, disappearing downward at the frayed shoulder where an invisible dancer performs twisting pirouettes for an enthralled audience. Just the arm turning there above the water. For the dogs on the bank, for the blinking rain, for the smoke, the house, the trees, and the crowd calling angrily from across the river, Stamper! Hey, goddamn you anyhow, Crank Hank Stamper! And for anyone else who might care to look. East, back up the highway, still in the mountain pass where the branches and creeks still crash and roar, the Union President, Jonathan Bailey Draeger, drives from Eugene toward the coast. He is in a strange mood, owing largely, he knows, to a fever picked up with his touch of influenza, and feels at once oddly deranged and still quite clear-headed. Also, he looks forward to the day both with pleasure and dismay. Pleasure because he will soon be leaving this waterlogged mud wallow. Dismay because he has promised to have Thanksgiving dinner in Wakanda with the local representative, Floyd Evenright. Draeger does not anticipate a very enjoyable afternoon at the Evenright household. The few times he had occasion to meet with Evenright at his home during the Stamper business, those times were certainly no joy. But he is in a good humor nevertheless. This will be the last of the Stamper business, the last of this whole Northwest business for a good long time, knock wood. After today, he can get back down south and let some of that good old California vitamin D dry up this blasted skin rash. Always get skin rash up here. An athlete's foot all the way to the ankle. The moisture. It's certainly no wonder that this area has 2 or 3 natives a month take the one-way dip. It's either drown your blasted self or rot. Yet actually, he watches the scenery swim past his windshield. It doesn't seem such an unpleasant land for all the rainfall. It seems rather nice and peaceful, rather easy. Not as nice as California, God knows, but the weather is certainly far nicer than weather back east or in the Midwest. It's a bountiful land, too, so it's easy as far as survival goes. Even that slow, musical Indian name is easy. Wakanda Auga. Wakanda Agua. And those homes built along the shoreline, some next to the highway and some across. Those are very nice homes and not at all the sort one would imagine housing a terrible depression. Homes of rented pharmacists. Homes of retired pharmacists and hardware men, Mr. Draeger. All this complaining about the terrible hardship brought on by the strike. These homes seem a very far cry from terrible hardship. Homes of weekend tourists and summertime residents who winter over that valley and make enough to take comfy near the upriver salmon run in the fall. And quite modern, too, defined in a country one might think of as somewhat primitive. Nice little places. Modern, but tastefully so. In the ranch-style motif, with enough yard between the house and the river to allow for additions. With enough yard, Mr. Draeger, between the house and the river to allow for the nearly 6 inches the Wakanda Auga takes as its yearly toll. It has always seemed odd, though. No houses at all on the bank, or no houses at all on the bank if one excludes the blasted Stamper home. One would think that some houses would be built on the bank for convenience sake. That has always seemed peculiar about this area. Draeger bends his big Pontiac around the riverside curves, feeling feverish and mellow and well-fed, with a sense of recent accomplishments, listlessly musing about a peculiarity that the very house he muses about would find not the least peculiar. The houses know about riverside living, even the modern weekend. Summertime places have learned. The old houses, the very old houses that were built at Cedar Shake and Lodgepole by the first settlers at the turn of the 1800s, were long ago jacked up and dragged back from the bank by borrowed teams of horses and logging oxen, or if they were too big to move, were abandoned to tip headlong into the water as the river sucked away the foundations. Many of the settlers' houses were lost this way. They had all wanted to build along the river's edge in those first years. For convenience sake, to be close to their transportation, their highway of water, as the river is referred to frequently in yellowed newspapers in the Wakanda Library, the settlers had hurried to claim bankside lots, not knowing at first that their highway had a habit of eating away its banks and all that those banks might hold. It took these settlers a while to learn about the river and its habits. And we're going to stop there. That, of course, is Ken Kesey, Sometimes a Great Notion. And we don't have the close music today. What the hell was it? Kalimba by Mr. Scruff. I'll have it for you next week. I can't even fake it. All right. Get back to work.